It was the great Protestant theologian Karl Barth who many years ago expressed his frustration with both Protestant and Catholic liturgies. He said, "We Protestants have preaching without sacrament. And the Catholics have sacrament without real preaching." Set me to wondering, was I a Protestant in an earlier life? Certainly, for some of us, there are very vivid memories in our childhood of being told that a priest had preached a sermon to us, and all we could remember was some right up in your face stuff about dollars and cents and the cost of running the parish. There is an element of truth, at least, in Barth's criticism. I like to think things have changed, but historically it has been true that the Protestants put an almost inestimable value on the preaching of the word, and Catholics maximized the sacredness of the sacrament, and the preaching wasn't all that important. This observation, this complaint, if you will, of the famous theologian is especially relevant in the context of today's liturgy, for the Gospel of Emmaus, I have come to believe, is what you might call a liturgy within a liturgy, with all the necessary elements present. Jesus with the disciples on the road, the proclamation of the word, the retelling of the sacred stories. And once they've arrived, in the breaking of the bread, the sacrament. Right on, you might say, interrupting me. There it is. The two essential elements of good worship, of authentic liturgy. The proclamation of the word, the celebration of the sacrament, the breaking of the bread. But I say to you, excuse me, I wasn't finished. For I insist there are not two essential ingredients in the best liturgies, but three. And it is the third that is all too often shortchanged, left out, minimized, made too easy or ignored altogether. And that third vital element, which really I become more convinced of this all the time, which links the other two together and gives them authenticity, is the embrace of the stranger, the other, the alien. And whether the focus be on the preaching of the word or the celebration of the sacrament or both, without that vital link, something truly absolutely necessary for the fullness of prayer has been left out. To make my point more persuasively, if I can, come with me now to Emmaus. Walk with me as the disciples of the here and now to, in your imagination, that forever to be remembered village. See what I see. Experience what I experience each time this story is retold. Jesus is risen. No doubt about it. Jesus the loser, Jesus the battered, the broken, the put down into death, has already risen. He is now triumphant Lord. But for these two disciples who were his friends and passionate admirers, this is not enough. They still trudge along, shoulders sloping, bemoaning their fate. And it is not enough even when they are given the most fantastic scripture course ever given in the history of the world. For take note, it is not merely some eminent biblical scholar who brings it all together for them, not some learned rabbi who, you might say, ties up the loose ends and makes them understand what God was speaking of. No, it is the Word himself who teaches them now. Jesus, now Christ, Lord, the fulfillment of all the prophecies. It is He Himself who speaks and teaches them across the vast stretch of the hopes and dreams of their mothers and fathers and forebears back through the generations. And it is not enough. They, to use a contemporary phrase, they still don't get it. Jesus risen. Jesus explaining. Jesus, you might say, surely tugging at their emotions when He explains to them now those haunting phrases they knew so well from the sacred scriptures, put in the context of Himself. For example, led like a lamb to the slaughter, dumb as sheep before the shearer. Jesus explained it. And having risen so recently after His crucifixion, putting into sacred context for them such words as, they have pierced my hands and my feet, they have numbered all my bones, and upon my vesture they cast lots. Jesus, Lord, tells them, and it's not enough. Ah, but then the moment of truth comes. As they approach the village, having failed to see the risen Christ in this teacher of teachers, they do not fail to see Jesus in the stranger in need. To the stranger about to go down the road alone into the dark, they say, hey, wait a minute. Stay with us. Be our guest. Come share at our table. And then, as one of the translations puts it, to my unending delight, then it happened. They knew Him in the breaking of the bread. Oh, the importance, the value, the power of the word is beyond our words to describe. The force of the Spirit speaking through the scriptures is beyond our comprehension. And the celebration of the sacrament is a privilege that defies mere human words. But the one or the other, or the two together, without this vital link, are at last doomed to be frustrated in their ultimate divine purpose. Perhaps the Protestants, I say with all due respect, depend too much on the preaching. And some of us know all too well how so many Catholics, even to this day, lean too heavily on the magic and the mystery of the sacrament celebrated. This is part of our reality. But both Protestant and Catholic, all Christians, fail when they pray and when they celebrate in the measure they fail to make the prayer, the word, and the sacrament become real and enfleshed and immediate in the person of the other, the alien, the stranger, too often called the strange. All fail when the celebration, the profession and practice of the faith lacks this dimension. But you might say to me, hold on there, Healy. You're getting carried away. You give them too much credit. Was that so hard to welcome Jesus? Did they not proclaim their hearts were burning within them, fascinated by His insight and His explaining of the scriptures? Was this all so virtuous to welcome Him to their table? And in a sense, you're right. No, it wasn't. But let's not fail to note. God doesn't always come to us in the unattractive. Sometimes God comes to us in the supremely attractive. the fascinating, the beautiful, and the lovable. And if my theory, if you'd like to call it that, is not valid, then I would invite you to explain to me why that very interesting little line in the recounting where it says, he made as if, he, in another translation, pretended. In yet another, he gave the appearance as if he would go on alone. Except that they might put the vital link in place between word and sacrament and say to the stranger, welcome. Come into our hearts. Come into our home. Share our bread. Sisters and brothers, we who are the church are forever on our way to Emmaus. All our shoulders sag with more than good reason over hopes dashed and dreams deferred, over what seem to be divine promises never quite kept for us. We know what it's like trudging along the road to Emmaus. We used to hope that Jesus would solve all the problems. We used to hope he would make it easy and bring us home in glory and let us escape the way of the cross. We have heard the word, and in truth, we have understood it. For most of us, with God's priceless gift of faith, we've heard the scriptures proclaimed time and time again, and we do believe that Jesus is risen. We tell the world that by our very gathering here and by our presenting ourselves to receive and to celebrate the sacraments of the church. But in a very real sense, that cerebral faith, that believing up here, is like them for us. Not enough. And however great the delight and the sense of passing well-being we find in the remaking of the mysteries and the celebrating of the sacraments, we'll walk away a people fooled and deceived, a people deceiving ourselves, in the measure we do not accept, indeed demand, that vital link, that encounter with the other to find the risen Christ where he is and flesh today. And the fears and the hopes and the dreams and the disappointments of the neighbor, of the other, of the alien. We are on our way to Emmaus, and the scripture has now already been explained to us. And once again, but like these disciples, we are slow to believe what the prophets have taught. Did not the Messiah have to undergo all this in order to rise? Did he not have to be in the flesh of the frail and simple hurting people of our time as well as theirs? Do we not need to find him, to touch him, to welcome him, to embrace him in the other, if what we proclaim is to become real and true to us? How long, my sisters and brothers, fellow travelers on the road to Emmaus, how long, I ask you, will we who have heard the word and long to break the bread, how long will it be before we recognize Jesus, the Christ, in the plaintive cries of the still suffering people of Haiti? How long will it be before we recognize that sacred encounter with the Lord in the unemployed, the uninsured, the unnoticed, and indeed even the put down and pushed aside in our own neighborhood, in our larger community, in our country and throughout the world. How long will we keep trying to get to Emmaus and find our place at the table without translating the word that was given into that vital deed of embracing the stranger, so that our breaking of the bread may be authentic, not an escape at all, but an encounter with the Christ who is real, who is here, and who is now. An especially plaintive cry goes up, a demanding, a protesting, an insistent cry this very day in our nation's capital. How long will it be before those who seek Christ and have been told by Jesus so clearly where he will be at every time and in every place, how long will it be before those who say, we are the Christian people, we're on our way to Emmaus, how long before they hear the very voice and see the very face of Jesus and the gay and lesbian people who keep trying to tell the larger community how foolish, how unfair, how absurd is the general estimate of their reality? When will we be willing to open ourselves to embrace the Christ in people who are different, people who are for us strange or stranger, alien or other? How many times will we dare to come and expect to be included, to get a fair share and a satisfying piece of the bread broken? If we have not yet opened ourselves to see this wondrous Christ, this puzzling Christ, this mysterious Christ in the other. I have in my heart a very clear and urgent prayer this day, privileged once again to proclaim this, which I have to confess is my favorite gospel passage of all, and to reflect on it at the risk of understanding or misunderstanding, so be it. But my prayer this day is no less than this, that we who have so often heard the word will make the vital connection, the human connection between the word and the sacrament, that the hearts burning within us will be truly open to the Christ in every other. And that then we will be free to, so to speak, return to Jerusalem and tell all the others how we came to know him in the breaking of the bread.